Hello, welcome to Randomer Nintendo episode, insert number here.
36.
36, really?
Yeah.
Got to do a little bit more robotic, though.
36.
There we go.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, episode 36. It's been a while, mainly because of these two over here just not being available.
We've been traveling the world.
So I guess going down the row, Kevin, what do you got to say for yourself?
I was taken against my will, so you can't blame me.
That's right.
I was not taken against my will. But no, I was in Spain for a while. Don't remember the dates anymore. I think it was.
Was it like a week and a half?
Don't remember. It was about a week and a half. Like, yeah, but I don't remember the
early days. March.
I believe you left in late February and came back between March 6th and 8th, somewhere in there.
Yeah, correct. Correct. Yeah, yes. It was late February into the midweek of the first week in March.
I had absolutely nothing to do with the planning of your trip. I somehow knew the dates of your trip. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's where I was at. What about you, Jason?
Well, yeah. I was...
Jason.
Wow, so accusatory. I was in South Africa from other dates that I actually... I don't even remember those dates now. March 4th through March 18th. There we go. Yeah. So I missed Mario Day.
I was
in South Africa and down in Cape Town.
How you missed Mario Day exactly? You were alive on Mario Day, so I don't know how you miss it.
Yeah, I didn't really miss it actually. If anything, it was more convenient because instead of them announcing their stuff, which we'll talk about later, at like 6 a.m, like they did in Pacific time, I saw it at 3 p.m. So it was very convenient. But yeah, I was in Cape Town for a week, and then we went up to their giant national park, Kruger, and did safaris for 5 days? 4 days? 5 days?
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. Yeah.
That does sound pretty cool.
What'd you do? What'd you do holding down the homestead, Angel?
Well, I took and picked up Elvis from the airport, which I guess by association also picked up Kevin over here.
Yep.
So that was pretty cool. And honestly, not a whole lot worth really mentioning, just some more drawing, some more just cleaning, organizing stuff that I'm really proud of. Like, you know, you go to IKEA, you buy a plastic container, and then you put stuff in said container and you're like, damn, look at that, adulting and all that. But yeah, so that's pretty much it. Pretty simple week, I would say.
Like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. We haven't recorded in 3 weeks, almost a month. So,
yeah, which is kind of crazy. It's been that long.
Kevin, what would you say your trip highlight was if you had to pick one?
Oh, man, it absolutely had to be Salmon Guru, which was this bar that we went to in, where was it in? I think it was in Madrid. Absolutely the best bar I've ever been to in my entire life. And sure enough, when we looked it up, it was voted number 15th. In the best bars of the entire world.
Wow.
And yeah, it was absolutely the best bar that we've ever been to. We went like around 4:30 in the afternoon, and we only went in for two drinks each. There was four of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up drinking their entire catalog of alcoholic drinks. There were like their cocktails.
How many drinks is their catalog, is their menu?
It was 25 drinks in total.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So split four ways and you all sipped each other's, or did each of you have 25 drinks?
No. We each sipped each other's drinks.
Okay, good. Because you'd be in the hospital otherwise.
And they were all delicious too. Like their quote unquote worst drink was still like an 8 out of 10 drink. And that was their worst drink.
Damn.
Wow.
Yeah, like, it was really cool. They actually let us take a picture right behind the bar. I think Victor has that photo somewhere. But yeah, that was insane. And that was such a good time, too.
So is there anything special about it? Is it like the presentation? Is it just the taste? Is it a little of everything?
The presentation a little bit of everything. The presentation, like, it was really cool. Like, the bartenders would come over and explain to us everything that was in the cocktail. like what made it so special and stuff like that. And then there were some drinks that came in, like flask that you pour into the glass that you have. Sometimes they came in, like a tiki bar with like a little special tiki cup, that stuff like that. It was a really cool experience. Not only that, but the bar was like really, really nice. It looked really, really cool.
Nice. And the rest of Spain was good?
The rest of Spain was good, yeah. It's like something that I always bring up to you guys is like I love being in not LA with like a bunch of friends and just hanging out. And so of course Spain is nothing like LA. So it was really fun. And like the fact that of course it's Spain and I'm Hispanic, so I know Spanish, so being able to navigate through the world without having to use like a translator app was pretty cool too. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but you know, it's a lot easier without.
Yeah, for sure.
That being said, those Spanish accents are thick. Like people would be asking me like, "Hey, what do you want off the menu?" And I'm like, "I'm sorry, what did you say to me?" Like it's
How dare you, sir?
Yeah, it's just it took a little bit to getting used to, but our buddy Victor, that was his third time there, and for some reason he was able to cut through the accent like nothing, and it still took me forever to try to understand what people were saying to me.
Damn, pretty cool though.
Yeah, but really fun. Was
nice. Yeah. How long
were you there with her again? I keep forgetting.
We were there for 9 nights, I believe.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Hanukkah plus a bonus day, if you want to measure it in Jewish holidays, which is how I measure all my units of time.
In Jewish holidays?
Yeah. No, not really. But yeah, interesting. For some reason, when you said 9, it made me think of 8 crazy nights, but that's the wrong number. So I had to tweak it.
Well, all right.
Yeah. Wasn't that a great dead end of a conversation? Yeah.
Well, and I guess we might as well transition to, I guess, the one holiday that happened while everyone was gone. Mario Day.
We had multiple holidays, for what it's worth. Because we had Mario Day. We had Pokemon Day. We had St. Patrick's Day, which was a real holiday. Yeah. But if you want to talk about Mario Day,
I'm going to start with Mario Day. I mean, I guess I could kind of jump in a little bit.
Because Mario.
Yes.
Good man.
So, I guess unbeknownst to me, it being Mario Day, I finally got around to beating Mario Wonder, and I can definitely say, I mean, I really enjoyed it. Like, my brother and I, like, look, you know, art style, everyone keeps praising it. It's definitely praiseworthy. Still holds up all the way through. And overall, like, the level design, like, we're, you know, it was pretty fresh. It was fun. Like, I don't think we ever really felt bored at any point, or like, yeah, I don't know. I think the fact that it sounds like I'm kind of struggling to figure out exactly what to say may indicate something, but I don't know. I guess it's kind of a little weird. I mean, yeah, I guess we might as well touch on the wonder effects. I guess overall, the wonder effects I thought were kind of fine. Like, I think they averaged out to being okay. Because, you know, like, anything could happen, and on one extreme, you'll get something that's like, whoa, I did not see that coming. That is really crazy. Then on the other extreme, you get, did anything really happen? Did we actually hit the Wonder Flower? Like, sometimes, like, it just feels like you don't even get any new mechanic. It's just, like, any other level. But, you know, they did give themselves the challenge of having a Wonder Effect for every single level. So, you know, props to them for, you know, like, committing to that, which, you know, definitely commendable, I gotta say. But, yeah, I mean, the only thing that I mean, this is definitely 100% just a personal nitpick, but without spoiling anything, the way the final fight goes, like, it, you know, you've seen the beginning, Bowser turns into this giant castle, and then it just does that thing in the final boss that I'll just leave at that. It's like one of the biggest like boss cliches. Maybe it's more of a Nintendo cliche if anything. But it was still kind of fun. But it was just like, really? That's how you're gonna end this thing? Alright. But, you know, we still have the rest of the levels to go through. We're 100%ing it. Some of the levels that... Some levels are really hard. Some levels are shockingly easy. Some levels that are rated as hard are shockingly easy. And then some levels that aren't as hard are shockingly hard when you try to find every little secret nook and cranny, which is cool. That's what we do like about the Mario games, that like the difficulty, even though you have a, we could say like a set difficulty path, it's almost as hard as you want to make it, just depending on whether, you know, you want to go for everything, or you're like, oh, I'm going to try to do this jump this way or that way without using X item. And of course, the other thing that did come up semi-often was, I guess the fact that, yeah, the fact that you don't really interact with the person you're playing with often is kind of unfortunate. I mean, it sometimes just feels like you're just playing a single-player game by yourself. I mean, a single-player game together, I should say, instead of a single-player game by yourself. But thankfully, we were able to somewhat alleviate that just by having my brother play as Yoshi so that we could literally interact with each other. So we still managed to squeeze some fun out of that. Yeah, that's my simple Mario Wonder
impression. I will say something about the Wonder Effect thing. There were some crazy ideas they didn't put that I'm kind of like, I really wish they did. Like, I haven't rolled credits yet, but I do get what you're saying, that some of the Wonder Effects are more intense than others. I feel like to some degree Nintendo had to make a baseline of kind of like not super crazy, so then they don't have to have this onus on themselves of every single level having this absurd new mechanic or something. Like, you know, some of them are visual things, some of them are just little nods to other things. But at GDC this past week, at the Game Developers Conference, they did a panel with the director and producer of the game, and they were showing off some other effects that they didn't use. They had 2,000 different Wonder Effects that they brainstormed, and they put them on post-its and everything, and they prototyped a bunch of them. But like, I would love if Nintendo like put out a DLC pack of some of these other ideas down the line. You know, I was jokingly on Twitter saying they could call it the Lost Levels as a throwback to the old Mario Lost Levels, but one of our Twitter mutuals came back and said it should be called the Wonderful Pack, like the full pack of the, anyway. But some of these ideas are really cool. There's one like where Mario's head blows up to be just like a pixelated, giant pixelated version of his 8-bit head, but each pixel is its own sort of like health bar of sort, its own like notch on a health bar. So you can, there'll be all these enemies coming at you and you can bob and weave, but like your head will slowly get chipped away by all these other enemies. So you need to just keep some of your head through the whole thing. There's another one where apparently they're toying around with what if they made it live action, like it was a real Mario, and anytime he'd make a move, he'd be like, boink, swack, like he'd just say the sound effects out loud. That one's obviously a lot harder because you have to do motion capture, or not even motion capture, but just like full motion video integration and stuff. But like, it'd be really cool if they took some of these ideas and, you know, now that they've kind of been like, all right, here's the core game, here's the Wonder Effects that we feel were worth the real cut, being like, here's kind of the director's cut wacky stuff that maybe gameplay-wise doesn't work as well, but in the same way they sort of riffed on like Mario U with New Super Luigi U, and they sort of went in going, this is gonna be different, it's not gonna be the same, it's gonna be shorter levels, like live with it. I feel like they could do that with the Wonder Effects. Like, these Wonder Effects won't be as polished per se, but they're kind of more out there, more like WarioWare-esque at times. Like, go with it, see what you think. So to your point about Wonder Effects, I really hope they kind of bring back some of the crazy ones that they initially couldn't make work, even if they still don't quite work. Just kind of embrace the absurdity and see where that goes. They never will, but I would love for them to do that very much. And that might address some of what you're saying too about how like some felt kind of boring, because here comes all the really absurd ones.
Well, you know what? It's the first game, and presumably what will at least be one or two more in the style. So
I don't know. You know, I don't know if they're gonna do a Wonder Two. I think they might treat this like the 3Ds, where, like, you know, they had Sunshine, they had Galaxy, they had Odyssey. Granted, Galaxy got Galaxy 2, but that was on the same system, almost like an expansion pack. I don't know if they were going to.
I feel like the precedent implies they would, but I guess if you're going off of the 3D games, then.
The precedent.
I guess not.
I guess even the 2D precedent, yeah, because they went from 3D land to 3D world. And they went from obviously Mario not, U to Mario.
I mean,
U
but that's
to,
like a weird hybrid in between two.
Yeah, no, what I'm thinking is more like
if we're counting the game, it's most like which is the new Super Mario games. Those all have sequels. Even the sequels within the sequels had sequels.
Yeah, I guess I'm just kind of thinking it along the lines of like, except for Mario Wii to Mario Wii U, each one had a gimmick, and the wonder mechanic feels like the gimmick. Like Mario New Super Mario Bros. 2 was all about the coins. New Super Mario Bros. Wii was about the four-player. U was the only one that was a direct sequel, so I guess they could. Or like a direct sequel of the same mechanics. They introduced like no.
I mean,
they do have new mechanics in Wii U.
As far as
I take it back, they have direct. They have mechanics in Wii U. You can draw a platform on them,
and they're all like barely gimmicks.
Yeah,
I mean, this one, if anything, I guess has the most. But
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
art style and. But I mean, it almost feels like a lot of work to not want to reuse it again, or at least.
I mean, they're just at the end of the day, they're just scripted events. So yes and no, but I get what you mean. I do get what you mean.
No, I mean, I'm talking about the aesthetic. I mean,
oh, like yeah, no, the aesthetic thing. I mean, the Wonder Flower thing might be a one and done.
Oh, no, yeah, no, that I don't, yeah, I could see them doing.
Yeah,
I mean,
no,
I could see that coming back as something else with a different name.
Yeah,
but
yeah, the art style is staying for sure.
Like the way you get, you know, your mega forms and your Gigantamaxes or whatever, like
that's Pokemon, you know, but yes, Gigantamax.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there it's. Yeah,
oh, I see what I'm saying. Like yeah.
Yeah, just like that. Like it's gonna basically be something similarish, but it's like, oh yeah.
Yeah,
like,
and then if they make it less of a gimmick, it doesn't have to be in every single level in the next game.
I wouldn't mind replacing the word gimmick with Wonderflower, because I mean, I feel like gimmick has kind of a bad connotation to it, because a lot of these quote unquote gimmicks have always been fun. I don't think there's been one I've disliked. Even the coin one was kind of enjoyable in some levels, usually whenever you get the golden flower or
the coin rush feature was cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've never thought of gimmick. I know gimmick does have that connotation, but like even a few episodes ago where I was like, oh, 2024. Back when the Switch 2 looked like it was coming out in 2024, and back when, you know, 2024 is gonna be the year of the gimmick, and that wasn't a negative to me. That was just gimmicks. They're just a hook on top of a basic idea.
No,
yeah.
It just has a negative. I mean, I still see it as a negative.
They consider, I was listening to, I think it was Kit and Kristar, one of those podcasts with like the insider folk at Nintendo. And they were saying that like the developers from Japan always refer to stuff as gimmicks, and they had to like train it out of them and be like, gimmick isn't as positive of a word in America as it is for you guys in Japan. Like gimmick in Japan is like feature, and here it's like, it has this like edge to it, like this negative edge to it, like you're saying. So I view it more in the Japanese light personally, as like it's just a thing that it has, that like a little extra piece, a little extra like digital tchotchka to the idea of whatever they're doing.
I mean, I guess it doesn't help that some, I can't even think of like an example, but I'm sure there were plenty of games at one point that had a gimmick at some point, because you know, I think it comes from the fact that some of them in the beginning were just very shallow. Like,
yeah.
Even the gimmick itself wasn't that great. It was just like, oh, I guess you could blame the Wii for that. Where a lot
that's
of those gimmicks were,
waggle.
It has motion. Like, just the fact it has motion. Like, why? Like this game would have been 100 times better if it just didn't have the motion.
I mean, stuff like Mario can do a spin jump. If you shake the controller, it's like, sure. I mean, he used to be able to do it with the R button, but okay, I'll shake instead. And that's like, oh, real innovation. No, that's like gimmick in the boring sense. Yeah.
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 But tomato, tomato. What about Pokemon Day? What did they do?
Well, hold on. We didn't even talk about what Mario Day was. You just blew right through Mario Wonder and left it behind.
Wait, there's more?
Mario Day was, this was the first time, this was the first time Nintendo first party, like Nintendo themselves did something for Mario Day. Normally, they kind of were just like, we're going to put some stuff on sale and let our third-party partners do stuff. And even then, the third-party partners barely do stuff. Like, we went to Super Nintendo World last year for the first time on Mario Day. I don't think Universal even knew it was Mario Day. Like, it's not like Mario Day is like this weird thing where it's like they kind of market it, they kind of don't. Like, one year, like, Bloomingdale's launched like a Mario clothing line on Mario Day. And then, like, Google Maps had like a Mario Kart Mario for the car icon on Google Maps. And that was like, it's Mario Day, and Nintendo did nothing. That was it. Then another year, like, they put some games on sale. So this is the first year that I can recall where Nintendo actually was like, hey, it's Mario Day, and we're going to tell you some stuff about Mario that you didn't know.
You know what happened there? They probably saw that people were infringing on their IP for Mario Day, and they said, no. How about we do it? Because we're Nintendo, and no one else can use Mario for anything.
That's probably part of it. I'm sure. I bet you it's a mix of them wanting to like have ownership of it and them realizing they kind of need the extra marketing juice this year. Like Switch is selling okay enough, right?
And
like,
I was kidding about the infringement part.
No, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're like, we need to own it because they're doing that with all their stuff. I mean, emulators. But yeah, no, I think there was probably some element beyond that of honestly, like, what do they have to promote the Switch with this year? Like, there's not a whole lot. It's all ports and then who knows. So in the same way they used to do, like, Year of Luigi when they didn't have a whole lot else going on. I feel like Mario Day was like, oh, hey, we're celebrating Mario in this fun way. Like, here's the release date for Luigi's Mansion 2. It's actually coming in May. Or, I mean, June. Here's the release date for Paper Mario. It's showing up even earlier in May. Like, yay, Mario Day. But then they also announced the Mario movie sequel. Well, the new movie in the Mario movie universe, I guess is probably the better way to put it. I mean, we all knew it was coming. The movie made $1 billion. But Miyamoto and Chris, what's his name, from Illumination, got on a video.
Is that his actual name?
And in a Nintendo Direct style. What?
Correct.
What?
Chris, what's his name?
Nope. No, the director, the guy, the head of Illumination, not Chris Pratt. The Illumination chairman, who's on the Nintendo board now. I forgot his last name. But that guy. The two of them got on a Nintendo Direct presentation style format thing. And we're just like, we're making a sequel, but they didn't call it a sequel. We're making a new movie. It will broaden the Mario movie world in some way. And it'll be out in 2026. Same weekend as the first movie in 2026. So April, early April. And on the one hand, obviously that was going to happen. But on the other hand, like, again, Nintendo used Mario Day to like announce things and like made a thing of it, and I'm personally very excited because I love the Mario movie.
What did they announce? I mean, I saw the video. I remember them saying, yeah, the stuff about the movie, and I'm like, well, yeah, of course you're gonna make a sequel or follow-up, or, you know.
Yeah, I don't even know what this is. Before we get to what else they said, I don't even know what, like, they didn't call it a sequel. Like I was saying, they kept talking about expanding the Mario world. That could easily mean, like, some people online are making some weird assumptions, like, oh, expanding the world, they're going to outer space, Mario Galaxy, they made that, no, I think they just mean, like, a broader scope for the movie, or sort of a spin-off, maybe it's more about Mario and Donkey Kong, maybe it's more of a Donkey Kong movie, tie in with the theme park expansion, tie in with the Donkey Kong resurge. I mean, Angel, you and I, we were just at, like, Target the other day. And they had these Donkey Kong shirts, like officially licensed, with character art that hasn't been used in any game. Like, Nintendo's making character art of Donkey Kong without a game to go with it. And they're launching a theme park without a game to go with it. And they have this major role of him in the movie. It feels like there's an opportunity there to do something with Donkey Kong, or maybe something more with Yoshi, or maybe who knows what. But it sounds like it's not necessarily Mario Movie 2. It might be like Mario and Donkey Kong's Misadventures or whatever. Maybe
a show on Paramount.
yeah, like the Knuckles show that they're doing for Sonic.
Would it be that weird if they're both on Paramount? Or,
well, it won't be on Paramount because this is Universal, so it'd be on Peacock. Comcast is the parent company here, so it'd be on Peacock. But honestly, I would not be surprised if Illumination and Nintendo are watching Knuckles very closely, and if that resonates and does well, I would not be shocked, given they have all the assets from the movie. They're able to obviously turn around pretty quick to do a sequel in 2 years after the first one took however many years. I wouldn't be surprised if they say, hey, why don't we throw some of these together into a limited series on Peacock? You know, it's a $1 billion movie franchise. Maybe that's the Donkey
animated
Kong story.
Series.
What was that?
With that, they need to give us a 2D animated series in that, I guess, official Mario art style.
That would be cool. Hardline. That would be cool. I could see them doing like shorts of that.
I don't even know what. Yeah, I can't see it being like an 11-minute thing. It would have to be like little 5-minute or even a shorter skits.
It'd be like half a Bluey in length. Yeah. I measure things in Jewish holidays and Bluey really episodes, yes.
Yeah. It's like a currency.
Yeah. But
I'll be over there in a Bluey.
I'm going to start saying that. That's an amazing experience. I'll be over there in a Bluey. That's good. But yeah, I could see them totally, the more I think about it, like maybe the Donkey Kong spinoff or whatever is a limited series and then they do something with the movie. I mean, obviously they teased Yoshi in the movie. If it's a direct sequel, I'm sure we'll see more of Yoshi, but who knows what exactly they're going to do. But they announced that. It's official. It's in 2 years. I'm excited. It obviously was coming, but it was nice to get like official confirmation. And then like I was saying before, they then sort of at the end of this 3 minute presentation were just like, by the way, Paper Mario 1000 Year Door remake's actually out in May, like the 23rd or something, which is actually quite soon. And then Luigi's Mansion 2 HD is out in June on the 27th. So there's some Mario for you. Oh, and you want more Mario? Great. Three Game Boy games are going to hit Nintendo Switch Online this week, that week, you know, however many weeks ago. So then we got like Mario Golf, Mario Tennis, and Dr. Mario all from the Game Boy, all on Switch Online. So any one of those things is more than Nintendo's ever actually done for a Mario Day. And it's interesting that they did them all together like that. And I had a feeling something was up because they were like counting down to Mario Day, which they never do. But yeah, it was kind of interesting to see that Mario Day got so much attention. And I feel like I was saying, I think it's just kind of indicative of a year where Nintendo is needing to kind of think outside the box a bit more. You know, like I was saying, Switch is still kind of trucking along, but with more and more signs that Switch 2 is now a 2025 product. You know, we're going back to that version of Nintendo where they have to like really kind of do random marketing because they where are they going to promote? I mean, they have like four games and they're mostly ports and they'll do fine. But like, you know, they need to put some extra oomph into Mario Day and get more interest around that. They need to, you know, we're seeing a huge push for like Princess Peach Showtime, which, it does have more potential than a Princess Peach game would have 5 years ago because she's obviously much bigger thanks to the movie and her role in that. And, you know, they're definitely catering towards a specific like younger girl demographic. I mean, the game really feels made for that demographic. But there's never been a game developed by Goodfield, never been like a B-tier Nintendo game that's getting the marketing push that I feel like Princess Peach Showtime is getting. Like they have a Kung Fu Tea promotion. They have special Joy-Cons. They have they had this whole launch thing at Nintendo New York last week, like the whole weekend. They're doing stuff with Brie Larson and like influencers and like there's like a lot around this game for a game that in terms of gameplay is very kind of like, you know, B-tier Nintendo. So again, that feels like something where if this was 2017 and they had a game, you know, a huge new game a month, they had Mario Odyssey and they had whatever, Princess Peach probably would have gotten some promotion and certainly towards that girl demographic, but I don't know if it would have gotten Brie Larson involved or would have gotten like, you know, a drink partnership or at Kung Fu Tea or anything like that. Like this feels like Nintendo's doing a bit more because they don't have a whole lot else going on this year. So then you kind
of. Is that game out yet?
Yeah, it came out over the weekend. Yeah.
Man, so maybe it's because I've been out of the Nintendo loop, already too. But I saw absolutely zero marketing for this game.
I feel like they're pushing it ahead. Like, I saw it a ton. I was getting, like, targeted ads, even, which I don't know if you think I'm a 12-year-old girl or I'm a Nintendo fan, but, like,
well,
I don't
you're
get targeted
a Nintendo
ads
fan,
very
so
much.
Of course you're going to get targeted.
But I didn't get that sort of, like, targeted ads for, like, I don't know, Another Code Recollection or, like, Pikmin last year or, you know. So it was interesting how much more I was
but
seeing.
I mean more in the sense of, like, I saw everybody talking about Tears of the Kingdom. I saw everybody talking about Odyssey.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, I just don't see a lot about this game. Like I said, I didn't even know it was out.
To be honest, I mean, I tried the demo, and here's the thing, like brief demo impressions. It's hard. It's gonna be harder for Nintendo to make this. I don't think they're trying to necessarily, but this game won't have the universal appeal of a Mario Odyssey, of a Pikmin, of a what have you, because it's Goodfield, and Goodfield makes good stuff. They make Yoshi's Woolly World, Crafted World, Epic Yarn, Kirby's Epic Yarn. You know, they make good stuff, but it leans a little easier. And then this game feels even simpler than those in a way. Like the demo, the way the game's structured is basically you go through these different theaters in a theater complex, and you have to help with these stage plays to stop the Sour Patch Gang or something who are disrupting the theater, and all the sparklets and theets. These are the name of the creatures. They're theets because they're in a theater. You know, need your help, and you have to use Sparkle to like get them back. And that's all fine and dandy, except Sparkle is just you walk up to things and hit B, and Peach like shoots a little ribbon out of her hand. And then you do that. And it's like these super simple side scrolling stages where you do that and you walk through well themed, like theatrical looking 2D ish, like Kirby and the Forgotten Land, sort of 2D but 3D spaces. And then at the end of each production, you get to transform Peach into something that fits that theme. So in the demo, there's one where you become like Sword Fighter Peach. And then there's another one where you become Patisserie Peach and you are a chef. And then they kind of slip into like sort of half mini games, sort of just extra special little thing. Like, so Sword Fighter Peach, same gameplay, but you're now hitting B to swing your sword around very rapidly. Patisserie Peach, you're playing these kind of mini games where you're like making cake shapes, like you're drawing cake shapes like a Mario Party mini game.
So perfect for Jason.
Or, well, I mean, yes, actually, it is something I could be. It's very easy. But it's just very, like, simple. And there's charm to it in the demo. And Peach has more dialogue in this game than I've ever heard her say. Like, they definitely got the voice actress to record a bunch of new stuff for this. But, like, it's not universal as much as, and I don't mean it in a way where it's like, oh, it stars Princess Peach and it's all pink. It's for girls. Like, I mean, literally the gameplay is not universal. It's so stripped down feeling and so simple that, yeah, it could be fun for like 6 or 7 hours at a discount price. But I don't think anyone outside that core demo of little girls, and boys is going to necessarily like find a lot in here. Like, it's fun enough in its charm, but it's not fun in its gameplay because it feels almost too simple. That makes sense. But Nintendo's marketing this thing, at least the way I've seen it, as if it has a little more of a big pull than it might actually have. It will certainly have a pull with a certain demographic, but I don't know. They're giving it a lot of push, and I think they're getting a lot of push because they don't have a lot else going on this year, and it's one of the few original games. But yeah, it's the demo, like I said, it was charming. It was cute. It was, I don't know what word you want me to use. It was nice, but like, it's not, no one's chomping. I don't think any of us are going to be chomping at the bit to play it based on my experience. So, and there are like a dozen transformations.
Chomping at the what to play it?
Chomping at the bit. That's an expression.
Oh, okay.
What do you think I said?
What I said? Don't worry about it.
Okay. Now I'm very worried, but no. So, yeah, so it'll be interesting to see like how it performs. If Nintendo pushing it harder in ways that I've seen at least, but clearly not that hard if you guys aren't seeing it, how that all shakes out. But yeah, I feel like they've been giving it a lot of attention on their socials and cross promotions and that sort of thing. So we shall see. But again, I think it speaks to Nintendo just having a little less this year. So they're working a little bit outside the box. They can't just be like, a game's out, we're going to promote it. And I think that's probably why Mario Day, to go full circle here, was more of a thing this year for Nintendo first party wise. It kind of felt more like Pokemon Day, actually. Like, Nintendo probably looked at Pokemon Day and was like, well, Pokemon announces a bunch of stuff, so we could probably do that too because we had nothing else going on. And I feel like, Angel, were you starting to, before I sort of reeled us back to Mario Day, were you going to bring, I feel like you're about to bring up Pokemon Day. So maybe we just switch over to that
now. If you meant right now, no. If you meant 15 minutes ago, I think so.
Yeah, see, I was right.
but that was when I thought there was nothing more to Mario Day to talk about, but apparently there was a whole lot. I apologize.
It's okay.
There was more to Mario Day than I initially realized.
Mario forgives you. Luigi forgives you. Wario, not so much.
Man, I don't care about Wario. Well, I mean, I guess I could throw in one last thing for Mario Day. Gelato Peak, you may not know them as this like Japanese Italian comfort brand. Not really sure what they are.
I think they're just Japanese gelato. And they just have gelato in their name. I don't know if they're actually Italian, but sure.
Well, yeah, but they have gelato in their name.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely, it's definitely 100% Japanese because all the packaging was Japanese, but gelato, I don't know. Yeah, I feel like it implies that there's some kind of Italian influence, whether it's just from them liking it, or maybe someone is involved.
Or regardless, just sweet and sugary, like a good gelato.
Yeah. But what I was going to say they released a line of comfort wear recently that was heavily advertised in Instagram at me, and one of them was these Bowser slippers, which I did buy, and they happened to arrive today, and they look like they're made of. don't even know what to call it. Like, it looks like they took the material that a robe is made out of. Like, actually, no. It's more like felt? I have no idea. It's like a woolly... It's like a woolly slipper. But point is, they look really cool. It's like the only thing in that whole line that I was like, oh, I gotta have this. But they're just... Yeah, they're slippers, but like the part that covers your foot is basically just Bowser's shell. And the rest of it is, you know, like a normal slipper. Which, damn, I gotta admit, they did a pretty good job with it. I mean, I got my money because they definitely weren't exactly cheap.
How much were they?
And it's also... I think they were retail like $69.
Oh, I mean, that's the same price as the Build-A-Bear Bidoof, so it's fine.
I mean, yeah, I just sent a picture to you two in the Messenger chat.
Yeah, I'm on their website looking at them.
But, yeah, and I think that's the only thing that actually sold out. I think everything else is still available. I mean, some stuff is fine. Like, there's like Mario equivalents of those slippers, but, you know, the Bowser ones definitely stand out. There was a Bowser cardigan that I was kind of tempted, but it says Gelato Peak on the back in huge letters that I was like, you almost had a sale. And that's pretty much it. It's some random Nintendo lifestyle clothing that I didn't expect to have. I mean, in a sort of related note, the Ninja Turtle Adidas shoes also arrived today, so I guess I got two new pieces of footwear today, which was kind of neat.
You know what should have been here at my place by now is that Build-A-Bear Bidoof I just mentioned.
Build-A-Bidoof.
Yeah. So here I am.
Build-A-Doof.
Here I am. I'm a 34 going on 35 year old man, and I'm going to tell you the pros and cons of Build-A-Bear. So
how about we transition to Pokemon with Build-A-Bidoof? So
there we go. Yeah. Okay. Pro of Build-A-Bear. They have a Bidoof. End of sentence. Con of Build-A-Bear. No, pros of Build-A-Bear. They have a Bidoof. He comes. It's new. It's online exclusive. You don't have to go to a Build-A-Bear store and build it. Thank God. They will stuff it for you wherever they are and then send it. I mean that in the most innocent way, but someone's gonna take that the wrong way. But
no, I definitely take it the wrong way.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, it's funny because I originally was gonna say something along the lines of it's great because you can stuff it in the privacy of your own home, and then I realized I should not say that, but now I've said it. So you get it's this Bidoof, and it comes with like a lumberjack shirt with little Pokeballs on it. It comes with a little orange bandana, and it comes with a little sound thing that you put in its paw, and it can say Bidoof five different ways, which is four more than I knew I needed, but I'm glad all five are there. So that's all great. The negative about Build-A-Bear, the con for me.
How would you describe Bidoof's voice? Because I can't really imagine it. Like, I can't. Like, Bulbasaur or Charmander.
I'll do you one better. I'm going to, while I'm talking, pull it up on the website and I'll play it into the mic for you. Oh, wait. That doesn't work because I'm on a headphone with you guys. You wouldn't be able to hear it. It's kind of like, it's not as doofusy as you would think. It's a little more like someone just saying Bidoof. But it's like Bidoof. Or it's not even like that. That's wrong. It's not like that. I don't know how to describe it. I haven't gotten it yet, so I can't really tell you. I just listened to it on the website. But
then why were you?
Because it's on the website.
So confident that you could provide us with some kind of.
Because it's on the website. Thing. Did you hear that?
Can't you just play the soundbite from your phone?
Can you hear this? Hold on. I don't know how to play this for the broader.
What if, like me, you all send right. us the link so we can hear it?
All right. But I want to play it. Oh, wow. Oh, that was. Okay, so I'm listening to him for the first time. He chuckles. And it's a little strange. He goes, Bidoof! And it sounds weird. I will send you guys the link. Everyone listening at home, go to buildabear.com/Pokemon-Bidoof-plush-bundle-slash-32207. No, I'm not going to read the whole thing. But anyway, so those are all the pros about Bidoof. Here's the con. It's a $63 bundle made up of a $36.
Jesus, that's what he sounds like?
I know, it's that's weird, right? Hold on, I'm gonna, you know what, I'm putting you guys, we're gonna have some reverb on the mic, I'm sorry, no one talk, I'm taking this off headphones so I can play Bidoof into the mic.
I don't think it will.
Oh, it's gone.
Well, we heard one Bidoof. I guess that was pretty good.
I could have just entered the, I could have manually put this in the podcast when I edit it. Why are we...
I don't know, but it's too late because now there's just double of you guys on there. So isn't that cool?
Well, we were only able to hear one Bidoof.
Well, I can't help yeah, you there. I'm also trying to get the headphones back.
Well, I mean, I guess now there's a big empty space in the podcast that will clearly be when we were trying to do this.
What's great is now there's double reverb. So, Kevin, at the 39-minute mark, you have a lot of editing. I apologize.
God damn it!
But anyway, so the con about Bidoof is it's a $63 bundle, which is fine, but I don't know why they call it a bundle, and they list off each SKU for the $36 Bidoof, the $12 shirt, the $12 bandana, and the like $7 whatever, all the pieces. If you can't buy them separately, just tell me it's $63, end of story. If you start suggesting I can take out parts of the bundle that I can't take out, I don't need the orange bandana. I tried to take it out. You can't take it out. So that's my con with Build-A-Bear. Like, why would you – it's like if you bought a game and Nintendo's like, you can get the plastic case for an extra $2, or if you just want the cartridge, we can send it to you in a baggie, except psych, you're getting the case no matter what, and it's those $2, you're paying it. Like, why even suggest it if you can't take it out? But whatever. Very excited to get my Bidoof whenever he arrives.
Wait, yeah, there's Pokemon. More than just Bidoof? I literally only thought that was Bidoof.
What? For Build-A-Bear?
Yeah.
Oh, they have a whole bunch of different ones. The bundle is just Bidoof and accessories, but they have like a dozen Pokemon, at least.
Yeah, I feel like when I saw your tweet about it, you kind of made it sound like it was only Bidoof.
It is. Well, no, the Bidoof's the new edition. The other ones have existed for quite a while. Yeah.
Yeah, when that came out, I was like, why would they just choose Bidoof out of all the characters?
Excuse you, because he's the best Pokemon. What are you talking about? There's no reason to have anything but Bidoof, in all honesty.
Well, thank God that they have other ones to choose from.
Are you planning to buy yourself Sylveon?
Not really.
Don't hurt yourself.
I already did. They have a Squirtle. Cool. That's fun. They have a Teddy Ursa. They have a weird selection.
They got a Charizard. That's pretty.
How did they have Teddy Ursa? Who's lying Teddy Ursa? Says the Bidoof nerd. Anyway. Yeah, so Bidoof.
Maybe because it's probably one of the few teddy bears they could have worked with.
Oh, that makes sense because he is a bear. And it is Build-A-Bear. Who would have thought? But yeah, so Pokemon Day.
This girl with this pimp, though.
Other weird thing, by the way, Bidoof was not announced on Pokemon Day. He was announced like 2.5 weeks later. Why? I don't know. Pokemon Day in general was actually kind of weird. This was the first Pokemon Day.
I don't even think of Bidoof as a Pokemon.
He is the Pokemon, not a Pokemon. So that's why you don't think of him as one, because he's the Pokemon, not one of.
Hmm.
Yeah. But to my point before about how like Nintendo has to do things differently this year, because they don't have very much, even Pokemon is skipping out on them this year. There is no holiday Switch Pokemon game at all. Like, they're finally taking a breather. Instead, we're getting Pokemon Legends ZA sometime next year, which I'm cool with. I really like Pokemon Legends, which is also coincidentally full of Bidoofs. This one probably won't be, but that one was. But yeah, so the Pokemon Day presentation was interesting because it was the first year that I could recall that they didn't really have anything for this year. They're coming out with a mobile Pokemon train card game, that's kind of a Marvel Snapification of the Pokemon Train Card Game. It's called Pokemon Train Card Game Pocket. And
okay, you got my attention.
Like, yeah, I feel like I'm going to be really into this too. So the premise is it'll be a simplified rule set that you can play quickly, but their main hook is every day you get two booster packs and you open the booster pack with this like swipe across and it like rips the booster pack and then out come the cards. And then some of the cards to kind of have their own version of like holographic or like the cool 3D cards in Marvel Snap, they have what they're calling immersive cards where you can actually like go into the art and like look around and stuff like by moving your phone around. So it's like a full 3D like space.
Well, not the Marvel Snap, so it's already pretty
this is like
a step up from what Hearthstone did. I mean, even Hearthstone eventually was like, here is some cards that are actually animated.
Yeah, this is like the 2.0 of that.
They were like barely animated. And then there were some eventually that were actually really, really animated. But
there is no doubt in my mind that they looked at Marvel Snap and they went – and they looked at like that Yu-Gi-Oh! App where they like streamlined Yu-Gi-Oh! As well. And they were looking at those and going like –
did you see the trailer for this?
We could do this. What?
Did you see the trailer for the Pocket game?
Yeah, I did.
The top comment is, ain't no way Homeboy was opening virtual trading cards while on a date and then trading them to a different woman than the one he was on a date with.
I didn't even notice that in the trailer. Is he really doing that? So he opens them with one girl, then turns around and gives it to another girl?
Yeah.
Wow. Pokemon. Home-wrecking Pokemon.
Oh, yeah. What the hell's he doing? Yeah.
That's so funny.
My guy. to be fair, she's also on her phone, so.
Ah, well. I guess he's a player in more ways than one, am I right? No?
Yeah. Okay. No, I'll give it to you.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good, right? Right? Yeah. They can't all be winners. That's pretty solid.
If they can nail this being like a 3-minute game, I might play it. I have not played a lot of that this season, so.
I'm for sure in. Like, I really liked the time I spent with Marvel Snap, while brief, a few weeks long. I really did enjoy how streamlined it was and everything. And if it's something that I have more of an affinity for, like Pokemon, not that I don't love the Marvel universe, but, you know, I'm way more in on Pokemon. I could see myself, this could become a problem for me. I could see myself getting way into it, especially with the idea of you get 2 booster packs a day and you, like, swipe them open. Like, that instant sort of dopamine hit, and it's just, like, every day a way to get you to come back to the game every day. That's dangerous.
This game is going to be filled with microtransactions, too, though.
Oh, for sure. But the question is just to what extent. Honestly, Pokemon hasn't been too bad with their games and microtransactions. Like the time I spent with like Masters EX back when it first came out, back when it was just Masters, or Cafe Mix, or Pokemon Go for a number of years. Like, I don't think I paid a penny into Pokemon Go in those 3 years I played it. Maybe at most I paid like a couple bucks total. So yeah, I'm hopeful that Pokemon Company sees this as much as a marketing opportunity for Pokemon and for the trading card game as it is its own money-making thing, and don't go too heavy-handed with microtransactions. And I feel like the 2 booster packs a day thing kind of suggests they might not, but we'll have to see to what extent they do it, yeah. But I'm very excited to check it out. It's weird between this and Pokemon Legends EA, because I really like Pokemon Legends as well. Like the more active game, more like active real-time battle stuff, and like you're actually going and catching, and it's not as, yeah, like that versus like Scarlet and Violet, I think I preferred overall. So the fact that they're making a sequel to that, this time in an urban environment, that's kind of the new hook with Pokemon Legends EA. The fact that that was announced, and the fact that this train card game thing was announced in the same Pokemon, like, it's probably my favorite Pokemon Day presentation, and they don't even really have anything coming this year for the Switch, which is kind of ironic, but yeah. So I was pretty happy with Pokemon Day. I wouldn't be surprised if Pokemon Legends is cross-platform, though. If it's coming in 2025, I can't see Nintendo leaving that on just the Switch 1. Feels like it'd be on Switch 2 as well.
No. I mean, you're as into Pokemon as you were into Marvel, right, Kevin? Or I'm guessing Marvel a little more?
I am not into Pokemon at all.
Just exactly.
Yeah, well, Sword and Shield was my last Pokemon game, and I did not play that game as much as I wanted to be quite honest with you.
Did you play any before?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I had, what was it? Silver and Gold. I skipped Ruby and Sapphire. Then had Diamond and Pearl. And Diamond and Pearl was like my very last one that I was seriously into, because I took it to school on my DS, and my DS got stolen there. And yeah, that was my last good, like, I'm sure that if I hadn't gotten my DS stolen, I still probably be playing Pokemon to this day.
Damn.
Yeah.
Sad story.
That is a sad story.
It was the limited edition red DS that came with Mario Kart DS. Broke my heart.
That is sad.
Well, you know what they say.
What do they say?
Would you care to say? Would you care to say?
Please tell us what they say.
It's time to transition to Nintendo Direct Partner Showcase. Apparently, okay. That's the next topic.
Okay. Is that what they say when someone loses a Nintendo DS? Well, transition to the Nintendo Direct and you'll buy something new.
Yeah. It's a transition. Nintendo,
it's okay, little Timmy. So Nintendo's going to announce another special edition for another
because
game.
You could say this Partner Showcase stole some of my time.
I don't think it was that bad. I do think it exemplifies my pride.
I actually do. I'm definitely over exaggerating.
Yeah, I know. No, I do think to the the beat of the drum beat. I kept saying this episode.
I didn't even watch it. So if anything,
yeah,
I,
you're not allowed to talk. No, but I'm kidding. But the like drum beat of what I keep hammering this point of like Nintendo's doing things a little different this year because they need to. I feel like this partner show, I mean, first of all, they rarely do partner showcases anymore, but the fact that they called it a partner showcase and then mixed and matched a whole assortment of things. Like, I mean, they had indie games in there, which would normally be an indie world. Like, literally, Another Crab's Treasure and Pepper Grinder were announced at in Indie Worlds and then somehow showed up in a Nintendo Direct as if they were, like, these bigger third-party games. And at the same time, they announced their own first-party game in the partner showcase. They announced the return of Endless Ocean, which hasn't been a thing for Nintendo since the Wii. And this new one's, like, 30 players online. It's a whole new sequel, apparently. Endless Ocean Luminous. Coming in, coming out on like May 2nd or 3rd, I believe. So, like, it was again, I feel like Nintendo's like, we don't really know what to do. We're just trying different things because, like, it's a weird year. So, Mario Day is important, and we don't have Pokemon doing anything. So, we'll do a partner showcase because we don't have a first party game. But then we're going to throw in a first party game. But yeah, and all with all said and done, they did have a presentation with 27 games. So, it's not like there wasn't anything, but it was interesting to watch them kind of pick and choose from different buckets to kind of put this thing together, further to me suggesting they really are sort of scrambling right now. But it was I did think it was kind of cool that they had a couple things of interest to like sort of fill the gaps of the first party lineup. So like a lot of the first party lineup outside of Endless Ocean is in Princess Peach or is ports, right? So they took like some pretty closely associated brands or things that would be reminiscent for longtime Nintendo fans and kind of dumped them in here as like a, hey, it's not us, but you know it's often associated with us. So we got like a bunch of new Rare games coming to Switch Online. Killer Instinct, randomly the Super Nintendo one. I don't know why. But Killer Instinct's coming. Blast Corps is coming, I believe. Battletoads, the sequel in Battle Maniacs is coming. Randomly, a couple of their racing games, like RC Pro-Am, are coming. But then they also are like, here's Epic Mickey. It's getting an up-res port. It's called Rebrushed. I feel like they should have called it Brushed Up or like Fresh Paint or something. Rebrushed sounds weird. But regardless, like Epic Mickey was a big thing on the Wii. It's back to World of Goo. Nintendo secured it as a console exclusive. The sequel, World of Goo 2, which was first shown at the Game Awards. They showed it here. You know, that was the one of the very first WiiWare games, so it has a lot of, like, legacy that with Nintendo true. And the Wii and stuff. And then they have an exclusive new Super Monkey Ball coming in June called Banana Rumble. I'm excited about this. It's kind of Super Monkey Ball, but also kind of Fall Guys. So it's a 200-level story mode like Monkey Ball 1 and 2. But then also all the multiplayer stuff has evolved into a 16-player online thing where there's all these different modes, but also you can like fully customize your monkey with different things to appear in the ball as they roll around, and it's like kind of this online thing like I was saying. And yeah, if they do like a 16 player monkey target, that'd be super cool. But yeah, it's the first new monkey ball I think in like a decade, like first truly new. Like every other monkey ball that's in this sort of slow revision of the franchise has been ports and stuff, but this is the first actually new one, and it's Switch exclusive. So it feels like Nintendo was just really trying.
But still
to...
made in Unity?
Oh, I didn't think of that. Probably. Which means the physics could be a little off. But you would think they would learn from Banana Mania, which was the one that got some flack for being in Unity. And maybe they could adjust the physics between that and this, because it has been a couple years. Hopefully. Hopefully. Also, they got to stop putting banana in the subtitles because you're running into like the Wii U naming, 3DS naming thing. Like Super Monkey Ball Banana Mania is different than Super Monkey Ball Banana Rumble, but both are on Switch with the same art style and come out 2 to 3 years apart. Like you already have Super Monkey Ball. You don't need banana there too. Like do something different. I don't know. Do like, I don't know, Tropical Rumble or something. Like, I don't know, monkey. I don't know. Don't say banana and everything. It kind of makes it hard to tell them apart.
What's going against bananas?
What
you got against bananas?
Nothing really. I love plantain chips, but like the names are too similar. That's all. But anyway, my point is like, again, like it seems like Nintendo, like usually they do it. Like normally we get a Nintendo Direct and they probably would have put the Paper Mario date and the Luigi's Mansion date and maybe even the Mario movie announcement. And then they would have put some third party stuff and then they wouldn't have put Pepper Grinder and they wouldn't have put Another Crab's Treasure. They would have saved those for an indie world, which they often do around GDC, so around now. but like everything's all topsy turvy. So we didn't get an indie world with GDC, but we did get them in the main one. But we didn't get the Mario stuff. That was a separate thing. So it's just like, yeah, it's interesting to see how they're kind of like trying to maneuver through everything in 2024 right now. But yeah, we'll see like what that turns into. But aside from Monkey Ball, also Microsoft was in the presentation. The whole Xbox we talked about on and off, but the whole brouhaha around like, is Xbox going multi-platform? Not exactly, but we are getting Grounded on Switch. I think it comes out like in 2 weeks. And we're also getting Pentiment on Switch. We are not getting Hi-Fi Rush, much to my chagrin, but supposedly it's coming to Switch too. So there's that. But yeah, so it's an interesting presentation in a lot of different ways because, you know, Microsoft showed up and everything. But yeah. And also Pepper Grinder. Have you guys tried the demo of Pepper Grinder? Do you know much about Pepper Grinder?
Only from what you tweeted, that it's some sort of Drill Dozer inspired game.
So yes and no. Yeah. So when it was announced, I feel like everyone's like, oh my God, someone's making the spiritual successor to Drill Dozer. Drill Dozer being an excellent but overlooked Game Boy Advance game in like 2005, made by Game Freak of Pokemon fame, came out after the DS came out, had a rumble cartridge in the, like a rumble in the cartridge. So it would rumble when you drilled. You controlled the drill, like left shoulder button, right shoulder button, and everything you did involved drilling one direction or another using those shoulder buttons. And it was kind of a slower paced platformer. So when Pepper Grinder was announced, everyone's like, oh my God, it's like, sounds like they're trying to do something like Drill Dozer. I mean, even like premise wise, Drill Dozer was about a bunch of thieves who were trying to get diamonds back. Pepper Grinder is like pirates trying to get their treasure back. Like there's some parallels. But then once you play it, it's very well done, but Pepper Grinder is actually more specifically like Sonic Colors drill mechanic. If you remember Sonic Colors, you could get a drill wisp, and that drill wisp let you very quickly, or even in Mario Wonder a little, you could kind of drill through the level, but with the speed and inertia of Sonic Colors is what Pepper Grinder is. It comes out in like 2 days, 3 days as I was recording, 2 days, something like that, and it's going to probably be a lot of fun because the demo is great, but like this whole narrative about Drill Dozer is wrong. It is Sonic Colors drill wisp. So just be aware, but it is very fun. And it has a very nice kind of 2D pixel art style. So, but I just need to put that disclaimer out there because a lot of people, you know, and Game Freak did show up. They were in the presentation. They were just there with Pocket Card Jockey, so which is a separate great game that you should check out. But yeah, if you're looking for Drill Dozer, this is not it. So just so everyone knows.
See.
But yeah, I think I've exhausted all the Nintendo catch up we could possibly do. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts or if you watched the partner showcase. I was,
I did briefly watch it a long time ago.
It was literally a
long time ago, right?
Yeah, it was a month ago.
Yeah, so I can't say remember much. That is not where Godzilla was shown off for the David Iver DLC, right?
No. I don't think
then,
so.
Then,
I want to say did Godzilla might have been in a state of play, but I could be wrong.
Then it sounds like the perfect time to jump into Final Fantasy VII Rebirth Impressions.
Ayo,
these transitions are top-notch today.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Also pretty good.
I can't tell.
Is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
That I'm shocked to hear, actually.
Are what? You? Why, you're cool. Shocked by that? No.
Wait until you're
shocked at the growth exaggeration. More like that's. I what I meant to say. I'm happy to hear that people seem to be liking it.
Yeah.
Well, if anything,
very different
the only thing
sentiments.
The only thing I've been hearing overall, without any spoilers, because thankfully nothing is a spoiler for me, is that people. I've heard this at least like in two different like YouTube videos or some comments, just saying how. People are now happy that they split the trilogy. They made it a trilogy as opposed to just squeezing it all in one game. Because I remember that being the initial sentiment, like, why did they split it into, or, you know, why did they split it? But now people seem to be happy.
If it was one game, it'd be like 27 discs because they keep adding more discs. You'd have to get a whole, like one of those six disc changers for the trunk of your car in, like, 2002 just to play the game.
Right.
Yeah.
This might come as another shock to you guys. I'm about 10 hours in. And, man, this game feels like a hot mess.
Oh, man.
That being said, I am still enjoying the game, but not nearly to the enjoyment that I had playing Remake.
I'm genuinely surprised to hear that.
Yeah. So they clearly increased the scale of this game, and I don't think that's working for me. The reason is because Remake was a much more focused and tight experience, and I think that the open world of Rebirth really messes up that focus. So for example, the first chapter of the game places you in a, and this is like minor, there's going to be minor spoilers, nothing that actually spoils the story, but just sort of the pattern that I'm seeing with this game. In the first chapter, it places you in a flashback to Cloud's early years as a soldier. And once you're finished with that chapter, chapter two throws you into the first of many open world areas. And these open world areas are littered with a bunch of different types of side quests that you can do before you head towards the main storyline quest. And man, these side quests range from interesting to just complete wastes of time. And unfortunately, I feel like there's much more waste of times than there are actually fun side quests. And so eventually, I said, fine, instead of finishing up all the side quests, I'll just move on to the next main storyline quest. So then chapter three essentially throws you into a chapter that was like a linear chapter where you just traverse a cave. And then at the end of that chapter, it throws you into another large open world with a bunch of other side quests. Where Remake really worked for me was the fact that after every three or four chapters, linear chapters, you had essentially like a small hub world chapter with side quests that were clearly optional, just like they are in this one, and not interesting at all. And those hub worlds were, I don't know, maybe 1/100th of the size of the open worlds that you have here in Rebirth. But the chapters still had enough story and combat content to keep you happy with how that story was progressing. The open world chapters here are more combat and gimmicky filled with like very small story developments. So in that regard, it's not working for me. One of the criticisms that I saw about this game a lot was its pacing. And I thought, I mean, it's an open world game. How bad can it be? No, it's pretty bad. I'm really not happy about that. And then we get to the combat where, a Remake's combat is absolutely my favorite combat system in any action RPG. I've been beating that drum ever since that game released back in, man, I think it was 2018 when Remake came out, if I'm not mistaken. And the combat is still, it's pretty much the same, right? You switch between characters and you're damaging enemies to raise your ATB bar that when filled, you can use your spells, your abilities, or your items. And that system returns and it's even more fleshed out in this game. Like now you can unlock team abilities where two party members will team up to do a special attack to do a bunch of damage or to do, you know, some crazy things. In this game now, you can unlock elemental abilities that won't cost you any magic points. And those don't hit as hard as a regular elemental spell, but they will raise your enemy stagger bar. And, you know, that's what you want to keep on doing so that when your enemy is completely staggered, you can do, I think it's like 160 times the amount of damage that any regular attack would do. Now, my big issue with this, with Rebirth's combat, is probably the most weirdest criticism that anybody will have about this game's combat. Just like in Remake, you have a party of three, and this game actually does something smart where you can quickly switch out between three different preset teams that you can create outside of battle. So instead of having to go into like a menu to switch them out, I believe it's L2 or R2 that will quickly swap them out. But Cloud always has to be in the party, and Cloud was my favorite character to play as in Remake, mainly because of how heavy his attacks felt, because he's swinging, you guys know how big Cloud's sword is, right?
Very.
He's massive.
Very.
Yeah.
About half my height?
He's basically swinging another human.
Exactly, yeah. He's swinging this huge sword around, and it feels weighty when you make, when like you make contact with enemies. It feels so good. In this game, it feels like he's swinging a baseball bat. His attacks are so much faster here that it feels like I'm playing an arcadey version of Cloud's character from Remake. Aside from him, everybody else plays the same. It's just something about the increase in speed in Cloud's attacks just doesn't feel right to me. And it's a shame.
Is it implying that he got stronger over the course of the last game, that now he can wield it with a lot more ease?
No, he started doing steroids.
Cloud is juicing.
No, not even like that, because he was swinging that bad boy with ease in Remake. It's not like he was struggling. It's not like he was always complaining about, like, man, sure, is this sword heavy? This game is actually, like, a little bit more wackier than Remake was, and Remake had this serious tone that was never undercut by its comedy. While here, it's trying to be funnier than Remake was, but it's not exactly hitting. For one thing, I don't exactly know what the time jump is between Remake and Rebirth. Like I said, I'm only 10 hours in. But Cloud feels like a completely different character in this one. Like, he's cracking jokes with everybody. He's, you know, he's got little snide comments here and there. I'm like, this does not feel like the Cloud from Remake. And nothing in the game so far has suggested that this is a huge time leap. Cloud does go through his character arc where he becomes a lot more open to the team. But here, it's almost like he's been buddies with them for years now, and it just doesn't fit right. Yeah, like, that being said, I'm still having fun with the game. The open worlds are varied enough, especially the first two are varied enough where, they have their own distinct look and feel. I just really hope that we get some more variety towards the other open worlds, because right now it's just not doing it for me. It's not like a situation with did you play Ghost of Tsushima, Angel?
I did not, but I did watch enough gameplay of it to know pretty much how that game goes. I mean, I thought I was playing a good amount of it.
Yeah, so something about like open world games is that typically the story progresses within those open worlds, right? Where you will go to a place on the map and you will do a story mission that still is set within that open world, and it progresses the story. Here, like I said, it's that pacing thing where I went to go to the main storyline quest thinking, like, oh, I will still be in this open world. But no, it just threw me into this new chapter, and like, at some point, I'm sure that I can go back to that first open world, but I don't know how long that's going to take. Because I thought that mission was going to be set within that small area of the open world. It's like, nope, you are now traversing a cave and you cannot go back. It's like, well, damn. It's just, yeah, the pacing is kind of tough for me right now. And hopefully that gets better towards more of the end of the game, but I'm sort of shocked that I am not loving this game the way that a lot of other people are definitely liking this one more than a Remake. So yeah, that's
so Intrigate doesn't help fill in some of that buddy-buddying, or
wait, say that again. I'm sorry.
So Intrigate doesn't help fill in some of that buddy-buddy that was missing from Cloud's
Intrigate. What are you talking about?
Integrate? Isn't that DLC, doesn't that take place like between those two?
It follows Yuffie before she joins the team.
Oh, so it's not even, okay.
Yeah. And that has like a exclusive character that that is never seen in 7. Combat's still fun. Like, in this game, you can actually play as Red 13. Where in Remake, you weren't. And Red 13's actually like a whole lot of fun. I really like him. He might be my new like swordsman like character. Because he's like really fun to play as. He's sort of a mix between Tifa and Cloud in that respect. But
does his sword have the right weight?
Well, he's a dog or a cat. I forget which one.
Oh, well.
Yeah, so yeah. He's using his claws.
Okay, fair.
I'm only 10 hours in. This game came out when I was in Spain, which really sucked. When I came back, I played a little bit of it. I've just been playing it over the last couple of weeks. And yeah, like I said, Remake, I couldn't put down. In this game, I play maybe 2 or 3 hours, and then I just put it down. Like, I wish I loved this game, but right now I'm not feeling the love. Which is a bummer. Yeah.
It does sound like, for better or worse, this game.
So my initial comment was more accurate.
I guess so. But it does sound like, for better or worse, this game kind of does that thing where, like, I don't know how to, you can tell when, like, developers, I don't mean this in any way, or like feeling themselves. Like you could tell when the developer thinks they've like hit gold, or when a company thinks they've hit gold. It's like I remember I was saying this when the Switch first came out, and like you could just tell by how everything was worked through with the Switch, and how like you pop the controllers on and you do a little rubber band animation in the color that matches the Joy-Con. Like all these little things you could tell. It's just like the team's like, we're nailing this. And everything you're saying about this sounds like they took what they did in the first 7. In Remake, and then like for Rebirth, like, what if we expand it this way, that way, and the next way? And there's like, we're nailing this. You know what? Cloud's gonna be funny. We're nailing this. And it resonated with some, and it's just not quite hitting with you. But it, yeah. Everything you're describing sounds like they were just like, so like, yeah, that was such a big hit. People loved it. Let's just go this way now. And we're gonna nail it, just like we did that.
And to its degree, I think it's like the best reviewed Final Fantasy game in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like forever. So, like, good on them, and good on the people that really
that led
game,
them down. Yeah, it's like if that confidence led them down a path that doesn't resonate with you, it sucks because that confidence has so much momentum, it sounds like, in what they're doing now.
Exactly. You know what I mean? That being said, one aspect that I absolutely love in this game, Queen's Blood, it's the card game that was a very Marvel Snap inspired. that
it all comes back to card games.
It all comes back to Marvel Snap.
Yep.
Yeah.
Queen's Blood is a lot of fun. I'm not going to try to explain it here. It's a game that you can play in less than 5 minutes, and just like everybody else on the internet that's played it, we are clamoring for its own game, hopefully on mobile, because then I'd have 3 card games that I'd play on my phone every now and then. So
soon to be 4 with Pokemon Trading Card Game Pocket.
That is the third one that I am including on there.
Oh, that is the third. Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't DC Dual Force. Come on. Who even played that game? Nobody. That's why it's getting shut down, you DC. Oh, I was laughing Novus's face. Oh, it was great. Queen's Blood. Anyways, that's Final Fantasy VII Rebirth for the first 10 hours for me. Damn. I'm going to play some right after this, just a high. Like, yeah.
And I guess like Final Fantasy, I'm out of transitions. I guess that's pretty much it. Did we have anything else?
You have a matcha drink, and I have, if anyone's interested in hearing what a safari in Africa is like, but that's
safari's like an open world. Drink.
I guess.
What was that?
If you happen to find.
A safari's like
yeah,
an
I guess
open
I could
world.
Just talk about.
It is.
That's true.
There we go. You know what else is an open world experience with things?
Hey.
Oh, that's
who's
your job.
The host here.
That's right. Go ahead. You can regurgitate.
It's more like an on the rails open world experience.
It's less on the rails than one would think when you're in the Africa.
So they let you drive?
Actual Africa. Well, so, it's on the
anyway,
rails. Okay, I see.
Anyway, derailing this on rail thing.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so matcha drink. There blenders. You go. It's not even from blenders. It'd be super quick, but yeah, Jason and I went to Coffee Bean this weekend.
This is not
was at the mall.
Sponsored content. If the FTC's breathing down our back, or FCC, it's not sponsored content. We are not getting paid.
Well, yes. So anyway, we went to Coffee Bean, and Jason, I forgot what he got, but he wasn't satisfied with his. And then I
satisfied. Put words in my mouth.
Yeah, you said it yourself. You're like,
I gave it a 7.8 out of 10 when you made me rate it. And it, by the way, was just an Arnold
that
Palmer.
Doesn't sound like you're, that doesn't sound like you were satisfied.
I wasn't dissatisfied.
Well, anyway, I ended up getting this matcha ice blend drink, which basically tasted like a matcha flavored smoothie. And I was just mind blown. I couldn't believe that it tasted that good. I was expecting something just average. I think I've only had one other matcha drink that made me go like, whoa, this tastes good. And it was the blueberry matcha drink at Little Tokyo. But this, oh man, I'm literally looking forward to the next time I can go have it. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
See, this is why I had to disclaimer that I wasn't sponsored, because you have pull quotes like, when can I next have it? And whoa, mind blown. Which, I mean,
because I normally don't get, because normally Coffee Bean isn't that great. There we go. I balanced it out.
I mean, yeah, I would be inclined to agree. Yeah. No offense, Coffee Bean. And no offense to its tea
leaf. Like, normally I'm not like, oh, let's go to Coffee Bean. Like, it's more like, I'm really thirsty, which was kind of the case. And it was like, well, I guess there's Coffee Bean. So, you know, it's
wow, those. You really balanced that out. You went from, I can't wait to have it again, to, well, I guess there's Coffee Bean.
I mean, I wouldn't say they're bad, but I mean, if I had a couple of their tea, though, I was just like, what the heck is this? I mean, I wouldn't say they're on the Simpsons joke level of like, I'm so hungry I could eat at Arby's, but you know, like, so they just haven't really.
Before we get to the safari, Arby's. What does everyone have against Arby's? It's a running joke for The Simpsons. It's a running joke for Jon Stewart when he hosts The Daily Show.
Wasn't that they do roast SNL. Beef, right?
Yeah, like their whole gimmick is we just have a lot of meat. But like, what? They're not that.
It's not good bad. Meat is the thing.
It's not horrible. If I feel like it's like on par with like Subway.
No, if you're going to make your thing, we have the meat, you better deliver on some good meat.
I guess that's fair.
And mediocre meat at best is not going to cut it when your
tagline
is, for what
it's worth, they do say we have. Ooh.
I really hope that was cute.
That was queued up and ready. Wow.
According to the waveform, it actually picked it up.
Wow. Okay. I feel like we're in like a debate club now about Arby's meat. Now, to be fair, they just say we have the meat. They don't say the quality of the meat. So, anyway.
Not wrong, but still.
No, I get it. I used to, when I was a kid, like really little, like third, fourth grade, I used to really like Arby's. I think because I never had before, and it was kind of this weird treat because I always thought fast food was like McDonald's and burgers. But then like sliced meat, what? But yeah, I guess I get it now. Your point, at least. Speaking of meat, you know what? Meat comes from animals. You know what I saw on the plains of Africa? Animals, but not the ones that the meat comes from. There were no cows. Nope, that's not true. We did drive past cows. But yeah, we did a safari, and I thought I'd just touch. Well, we'll bookend this episode, I guess, with trip stories, because you had your bar and I have the safari. But yeah, we, second half of the trip, did 5 days of safari.
Safari.
Twice a day.
Sorry.
Safari. Yes.
Safari.
Sabari, Safari, Sabaros. We had pizza, Italian food court pizza. No, but we did Safari. Why am I saying it like it's not a verb? We went on a safari. There we go. Multiple
what
times.
Did you do in the safari?
No, but we, so if, for those who aren't familiar, how it works is you have to get very early. So you go on safari for 3 hour chunks, at sunrise and at sunset. So 5:30 in the morning and 4:30 in the afternoon, because that's when the animals are most out.
That's too much.
And if you ever get, what did you say?
That's too early for me.
You would think it's very early, but the excitement of potentially seeing who knows what actually makes it worth it. Because when I was making the combat house not really on rails, the thing that's most interesting about like quote unquote real safari in Africa is it's not like when you go to San Diego Zoo or something. And it's like we're entering the giraffe area. You'll see approximately 2 to 6 giraffes starting now. Okay, next we're going to the elephant area. If you look behind that tree, there's almost always an elephant. Oh, there he is. Like, it's not like that. It's really much more you never know, because it's this huge national park and all these huge private game reserves and all the animals kind of go between them, like, interchangeably. And, like, someday, some mornings you go out and you see, like, a couple water buffalo and maybe, like, a rhino. And you're like, oh, that's cool. Rhinos are cool. Water buffalo are fine. And a zebra, cool. And then other times you go out and within the span of 15 minutes, you see elephants, leopards, lions, and, like, the leopards walking alongside the car, the lions sleeping right next to you. Like, you never know what you're going to get. It's a really cool experience that leads to some really unique kind of highlights. For example, one night we were driving back and there's two people in the car. So you're in like this like pickup truck that's like stadium seating kind of. It's a converted Toyota Land Cruiser. And so everyone has a good view because it's like three rows that get increasingly higher. And then in the front's the driver and he works with a tracker that sits on the hood of the car essentially. And the two of them look at tracks and kind of monitor where the animals may be and know kind of the patterns of the animals, and also have radios with every other car, truck, whatever, in the reserve, whatever lodge it's part of, whatever hotel it's part of, they all work together to help you sort of triangulate and see as many animals as you can. So this night, we're driving back, and of course there's no like lights, it's dark, it's in the middle of Africa, so you get really cool view of the sky, you see the gases of the Milky Way. So he actually stops for a minute and is like, yeah, you know, let's look at this for a minute. Next thing we know, seven lions, female lions, are all walking up to the car and alongside the car, less than a foot from us. Like that, it's just such a, another day. We pull up next to four male lions, all sleeping. They're just like big house cats. They're just like rolling around and like licking their paws and cleaning themselves and kind of like, you know, scratching their necks and doing stuff that like my cats do, but as big lions. We're like 2 feet away from them. They don't mind. Different time. Elephants, whole pack of elephants just walk right past us. They don't mind us. It seems like as long as you stay in the car, these animals are brought up or grow up or just live life with these safari vehicles around. So they think the shape of the vehicle is just this harmless animal, like the rumble of the engine, the shape of the vehicle. Like, oh yeah, that's just one of those things. They don't hurt us. They're here. It's cool. If you stand up and try and take a picture, you break the illusion and suddenly it's really tall. Why is it so tall? And then they'll attack. But as long as you kind of sit and just hang out, you can get within like a foot or two of them. It leads to some really cool moments that you just wouldn't imagine would ever happen. Like seven lions walking past you or sitting next to some sleeping ones or watching some eat from like 2 feet away. And they're like, you can like hear like the bones crunching and then like not, you know, you could hear them like as they're like happily eating. It's just like, it's really cool. Or like we followed a leopard for like a while. He's just walking down a road and we were following him. And it turned out he's actually a 1-year-old of another leopard. And then he saw a giraffe and he's 1-year-old. He didn't know what to do. And the giraffe was like, what's this leopard doing? So they had like a Wild West standoff on this dusty road that they were both standing on, just staring at each other for like 15 minutes. It's just like all these really cool. Or one night we like were driving back and we came across a bunch of elephants, and you're not supposed to shine a light on an elephant at night because they don't have the right cones or rods or whatever in their eyes. It can actually severely damage their vision. So we just turned off the lights on the truck. We were just sitting in the dark and we just heard like, you know, elephants kind of pitter-pattering around us. They actually walk very softly, but kind of pitter-pattering around us. We hear like an occasional little trumpet of a horn, or we'd hear like a tree snap or branch snap. Couldn't really tell what was going on, but we were like surrounded by these elephants just kind of going about their night. And it's just like all these cool little moments that it's hard to put into words, but it's just like, it's a very cool experience to like get to see nature be nature in nature. Like, it's very different than a San Diego Zoo. It's very different than a sort of wild animal park. It's very cool. Like, if you ever – I'm sure no one that's listening is not going to take the opportunity to get. But if you ever get the opportunity to do something like this in life, take it. Because it's a very, very cool experience, very unique. These animals, like, I don't usually use this word, but there's, like, a majesticness to the whole thing that's, like, it's very cool. Even one morning – a flash storm hit and it was pouring rain, and we were like out. We were like racing back to where we were staying to try and get in from the rain. And like, we were like racing ahead of a thunderstorm, and it was like rain. It's like, it was something like that. Like, we didn't see animals at that point. They were all in shelter, but just like this idea of like, we were just like racing through like the plains of Africa with like literally outrunning a thunderstorm. And like all these, I don't know how to describe it. It's just like really cool, unique moments. So if you ever somehow find yourself with the opportunity to go on safari in Africa, take it. I guarantee, no matter how much or little you care about animals, or how much or little you like look at pictures of lions in your spare time, or whatever, like, you will appreciate it. It is such a cool, unique, kind of once in a lifetime thing. So that's the thought on the safari. Oh, and also avoid getting stung by scorpions, because mine, I guess now brother-in-law, reached into his suitcase at 5 a.m. to get ready for one of these safaris, and in his sock was a scorpion, and he got stung. And he says the worst pain he's felt in his life is 3 straight hours of having to soak his finger in boiling hot water to break down the protein so it wouldn't like spread the poison up his arm. Fortunately, he was not allergic to the poison, which could have put him in shock and he would have had to be airlifted. Fortunately, it was not one of the most poisonous types. It was venom that was in him, but it wasn't poisonous venom. But yeah, that was an interesting. And then the funny thing is then we had to move from – we were staying at two different lodges over the course of the week. And we had to move from one lodge to the other, which was 4 hours on a very bumpy, unpaved road. And he had to keep his finger dipped in boiling hot water essentially. So he was like holding a little teacup in the back of this van, like bouncing around. We'd have to keep refilling the teacup with more hot water. And it was – somehow no one got burned. So that was nice. But it was definitely a weird scenario. And then right before we recorded tonight, I heard that – my wife's dad was unpacking. He stayed a little later than us on the trip, and he was unpacking. He got back the other night, and there was another scorpion alive in his bag that made it all the way back from Africa. So,
smuggled over? Damn.
Yeah. I mean, I guess he has to report it at customs or something. I don't know. No, yeah. not really. But, but yeah, it's just like, yeah, I, if you go, watch out for scorpions, but don't let the scorpion stop you from going. That's the takeaway if you ever get the opportunity.
Fortunately, they kind of did. Damn. But
hey, I didn't get bit. I didn't get stung. See, we 8 out of 10 people did not encounter scorpions. So there you go. You have a 80% success rate if you go, based on this very, very scientific math.
Yeah. Well, I guess in that case, back to you, Jason, for housekeeping.
Hi again. Yes, yeah, so something a little different this time. We've redesigned RamNintendo.com. It is mobile friendly. It is modern. It is a little more orange. And you can get all of the latest episodes of Random Nintendo at RamNintendo.com. Plus, look at archives of the old Random Nintendo show, the Random Nintendo show, Quarantine Chronicle. Everything's organized and divided up by the different shows. It's very snazzy. I'm very proud of it. It's mobile friendly. But of course, in reality, how often are you going to check RamNintendo.com? Probably not very. So be sure to still subscribe to us on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on iHeartRadio, on Pandora, on whatever you use. You can go to YouTube, find us there at Ram Nintendo. You go to Twitter, find us there at Random Nintendo. But again, RamNintendo.com, looking better than ever. We only finally updated it because our old layout broke due to a PHP update, but don't tell anyone that. But yeah, no, it's I'm pretty proud of the redesign. It's based off a template. I'm not going to take too much credit, but yeah. Pretty proud of how it came together. So at least go check it out this one time, then subscribe to us on everything else. You can also follow us individually on the socials, as always. I am JSR7 on Twitter and Threads. Kevin is KVN Gomi on Twitter. And Angel is World of Weros with an S at the end on Instagram for his illustrated thoughts on the world. Back to you, Angel.
All right. I guess just pass it back to Kevin for the final word.
Go visit randomnintendo.com.